Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. I'm very excited this morning. I don't know if anyone like me was up in the middle of the night to watch the sevens from Las Vegas, won by USA. I've always thought that Rupeni Thothunderbuka was the greatest individual attacking runner I've ever seen in the game. But now, for me, his title has been claimed by Perry Baker. And if you saw it, you would have seen an amazing score where Baker was hemmed in his own corner by three defenders, and about 1.2 seconds later, he scored at the other end. So that was exciting for me. I know you think I'm grumpy now and again, but that was just wonderful. Even better is our panel for today. We've lopped it down to three because with the talking ability and the authority of the two people opposite me, to have another one in, they would have got a word in. First panellist, Owen Slott. Since we were last together, Owen was made the Sports Journalists Association Rugby Writer of the Year, which was a blow to me because I'd actually written another acceptance speech, not the seven I've already given. But it was not needed. But having said that, joking apart, I think I was one of the first to congratulate Owen, and I said from the heart it was extremely well-deserved because the rugby coverage in the Times, led by Owen, is second only to the Sunday Times. And Slotty's had a great year. Congratulations, Owen. We've just managed to get his head through the door.
That's because I'm still wearing my crown.
Oh, sorry.
You know, I've been broadcasting with my crown on today.
He was carried in on the...
Thank you, Jonesy.
He was carried on the...
I think the orb was overdoing it, really.
But that's right.
Sceptre. Well, as I said in my acceptance speech, you know, it was nice of you to put it out on loan for a year.
Yes. No. That was very kind of you to say.
And then how everyone chortled.
Yeah, they did. They did, yeah. Except me. Mark Evans is also with us. Mark was once a gnarly old hooker with the Saracens amateur team. He's come on a bit since then, although he's still a gnarly old ex-hooker, but he has come on. Now, I said Mark was a very important man at the start of professional rugby when everything was in the lap of the gods. He also did his best for grassroots rugby by being in the Saracens team, which lost to Old Rigations in the Cup. was that intentional? To help the boys?
I'd love to say it was, but no, they thumped us that day.
Okay. He then went on to coach Saracens, and when the game was all in the melting pot, no one knew if it would survive. Coached Saracens successfully. Also, I think, Mark, you, because of the experience you got, you very much saw it as a marketing exercise as well. Peter Deakin, the maestro from the North, came in as well. So you did see it as a marketing exercise as well as trying to make the team win on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I've moved more towards that, you know, in my career. Some would say good job too. But yeah, look, it's you've got to try and make the numbers add up. Doesn't matter which sport you're in.
Right, we'll come back to all this in a minute. Now, Francois Pienaar then appeared on the scene at Saracens, and mysteriously, when he'd been there a few years, about six great Saracens players, plus Mark Evans, had departed. So Mark's on record as saying he's never really commented about that. It's possible we'd come to that as well. He then went on to Harlequins. He went through a relegation and a promotion. Good job for Mark that was still promotion at that stage. I keep on reminding you. also more than that, and this is really, really from the heart, he helped, he drove the changing culture of the club. When he left, they had a new stadium, they had a burgeoning team, they had a sort of multi-social gathering, which probably hadn't happened before, and were a thriving rugby club, and are a thriving rugby club. Then became chief executive of the Melbourne Storm, no one can accuse him of not getting about. Then an advisor, I think still an advisor, Mark, for the Stadium for Cornwall project, which is anyone who doesn't back that really has got no rugby soul for a start. And currently also, according to the press, advising a consortium in Boston about how they, Boston, Massachusetts, that is, about how they might get a team in British Rugby League.
Mm.
And we'll ask him afterwards, if London can't be successful in British Rugby League, well, how can Boston?
Yeah.
Mark Evans.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Six Nations, guys. Fourth series. Absolutely massive. Say England should lose. Suddenly, they're looking at having to beat Ireland at home, which is no gimme, just to avoid a complete disaster. Owen, we've given a real chew-in to England in Scotland, for better or worse. How important for a start is this game for Eddie and for the team and their momentum?
You sort of said it yourself. Clearly, it's huge. I think it's very big because Eddie's made it clear that you don't want knee-jerk reactions, and there have been a lot of us. I think if you're suggesting changes to the team, people say that's a knee-jerk reaction. Well, I just reject that completely, because a change to the team comes on a lot of evidence beforehand, which is finally throw in the Scotland game as well, suggests you should make changes. Obviously hasn't announced his team yet, and it's not until Thursday, but Eddie will stick, he will be loyal. I'll be absolutely astonished if he's not. And so at that point, what he has absolutely pinned his colours to the mast to has to be successful. Otherwise, his planning, his whole philosophy is shot to pieces.
Mark, Slotty said there that he's going to be loyal. Surely not loyal to the starting 15.
I agree. I don't think he's going to change very much. It would be against everything he's ever said, done. He just doesn't tend to change everything on the basis of one result. And you can argue that, nor should he. There's a number of players will be in it who aren't available. I think he might just stop experimenting with one or two things. I'm not sure he'll go again with a lock at six.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think that experiment, and I can see in theory why it should work. He just doesn't. A lot have been said about seven. Obviously, we do this one to death. I mean, that's fine, but actually, it doesn't. England's problem against Scotland was more about the speed of their own ball, as opposed to not being able to nick too much in too many of Scotland's. I mean, they just didn't get to their. And a seven, you know, they have genuine seven, doesn't actually fix that too much.
It doesn't, but sometimes isn't the gamble lie in keeping the same team? Because if this one plays with the paucity of imagination and pace as they did at Scotland, then Eddie and the team are really in trouble. And I cannot believe two such distinguished men as those sitting opposite are going to settle for the complete lack of counter-attack from the back that team has. Jonathan Joseph was way, way out of it in defence. And even though, Mark, I totally agree, the seven, you don't change your whole breakdown just by having a seven. Someone to get over the ball and slow it down surely must be worth a risk.
Well, there aren't enough players in the team at the moment who do that. And it's not just the seven. Dan Cole used to do that a lot. And the point is he's not doing it much at the moment. What's happened to Marrow? I know he's the poster boy and he's a wonderful, wonderful player. But he used to be incredibly aggressive at the break. I didn't see him, not just against Scotland. I didn't see him against Wales much.
Oh, and is Marrow having
he's having a blip, isn't he?
Is he having a second season syndrome after five seasons sort of thing?
I don't know to what extent, if at all, this is to do with the injury he came back from. Because he had that broken jaw, didn't he? Or cheekbone. And he came back quicker than people thought. But then again, if you're picked, then you're playing 100%, really, aren't you? I mean, that's kind of the deal. He hasn't been anything like it. And also, he hasn't been that that same personality on the pitch. I mean, we all joke about how he goes around smacking her on the arse when they've done something.
He's been
good.
Really quiet.
You don't quite see that. And again, even though we slightly laugh about it, he winds the opposition up with his just relentless sort of spirit
and physicality. And it's just and the other one who's had been playing really, really well. What's happened to Vinopola?
I think Macca was just taking on a massive workload over the last couple of years, and he's lost
looks
that.
Tired, doesn't he?
He's lost that energy, real energy. And the other thing with going back to Itoje, you know, that stuff you're talking about where he wound people up and all that, he did that to the All Blacks in their faces with mouth thing and everything. If you do that to Retallick and Whitelock, surely you can do it to a bunch of Scots forwards.
I mean, maybe it's no more complicated than a post. We've seen this, you know, historically, haven't we? Post Lions years, people who've been very, very heavily involved in the tour come back and don't have a great Six Nations. That this is not an unusual phenomenon. People go on about, you know, the sort of the selection, but actually I think the interesting thing about England's performances this season to date, and I don't think there's anything significantly systemically wrong, and they'll come back, but there's some great players not playing that well if you actually look at what they're doing.
I said 3 weeks ago that this team has reached its upper limit, and I really do think that. One other thing, the scrum half is a very good article by Stuart Barnes. I knew I'd say that if I stayed in the game long enough.
But it is actually a good article.
And what he's saying is that Danny Kerr, who's been marvellous, is coming on the last 20 with his zip and effervescence, is actually, with Richard Wigglesworth, it's the wrong way round. That Richard can't do what Danny can do, and I think as a fan of Richard Wigglesworth, box kick and everything against dodgy French wings in defence, I think that if they are going to play those two, it's got to be Wigglesworth and then Danny coming on.
It's like that. I agree with that, but it works both ways, isn't it? Because in the Wales game, Kerr was part of the team that got them the lead, and you wanted Wigglesworth, your safe man, team manager, game manager, to come on and see it out. So it sort of worked that way as well. But on the whole, you'd want your bag of tricks and speed to come on at the end as your joke card.
I'm real old school at scrum half. I don't quite get it. I know it's got really fashionable now to change your scrum half with 20 to go. Virtually everybody does it. And I know it's incredibly demanding aerobically, scrum half, to get to ruck after ruck after ruck after ruck. If you pick Richard Woods, who I think is a wonderful player, you start him, because he sure as hell ain't I hate the word, but he's not a finisher. You know, 20 minutes is not long enough for Richard Wigglesworth to shape a game, which is what he's good at. Yeah, I think you either pick Wigglesworth or you don't put him at the 23. Mm. If you want to do the classic, what people claim Kerr is good at, is you pick Robson.
Yeah,
he can do what Kerr does if Kerr starts. If that's what you want.
I think that's a very, very good point. And
Robson is the massive blind spot, isn't it? I mean, of all the players I've heard Eddie saying, I'm not picking so-and-so for this reason, he goes back to Robson. I just don't quite get it. I mean, he hasn't probably got the greatest pass, but he can still do the trick, and he can do so much more.
But we've had this thing where they've only had two nines in the squad, so you can't really bring Robson in because he doesn't know what the heck's going on with the signals and all that. And, you know, he is up there with the blind spots along with Armand and a few others. Mark, who will England be facing? There's a headline written on an article written by the rugby writer of the year 2017.
Who's that?
Slotty.
Oh, right, okay.
Owen Slotty. Yeah. That's him.
Yeah, Neil.
It says how farcical France have become a national joke. And very difficult to argue with that. What's happened to them, and is there any sign from France that they're even improving, Mark?
What's happened to them is that the governance of the game in France has fallen into disrepair, and that hasn't happened overnight. That's happened over a number of decades. And the things, whatever they are, whatever those birds are coming home to roost, in the sense that
cockerels,
possibly
cockerels,
let's hope so. They haven't got enough time together as a squad. The clubs are too powerful. There are far too many overseas players in the top 14, and the cultural weaknesses that French club rugby has always had in terms of physical preparation and dedication are still there. Now, you throw into that all the stuff that happened in Edinburgh and the argument that he's dropped the eight and then not picked him again this time.
Yeah.
I don't think France have got a prayer, actually. Even
quite
home,
a lot of that team were playing home club rugby this weekend. They don't have it written into the deeds of agreement in the FFR that they have the weekend off.
Also, as you said, though, in a lot of them suffered injury by falling into cupboards the edge of tables. Which is it's bad luck on the eve of international.
Yeah, for those few people in the country who haven't read Owen's piece this morning, well, once, shame on you. But the fact is that the explanation of some of the facial injuries of the face French players after the weekend, what they had mysteriously got into a fight with a wardrobe.
Bedside lamp was the fullback's injury.
I totally agree with Mark. I mean, how can you in the professional era have such low fitness standards, especially when it's obvious? And look, I'm a big fan of overseas players, and I always have been, but when you pick six or eight a club, or even more, when half the players are not eligible to play for France, and when you've got about six fatsos in the front row who look about 25 stone, I'm not the one to talk, but just unbelievable. But I just think that, is there a chance, Owen, in that they do have a massive pack? Now, Eddie's been talking this week about not having the size of athletes that you would like. Now, they've got Ituria, they've got the new number eight is good, they've got Slimani, they have got some big blokes, even if they can last 50 minutes. Have they got a chance with their sheer physicality, bearing in mind what Bastereau did to Italy?
Well, I don't want to be a nitpicker, but that Ituria is one of the guys that he dropped and hasn't picked again since. So, yeah. And I thought he was magnificent in the first two games. They always have a chance because whatever you say, there's the amount of quality in there. It's just dormant and untrained and unprepared. Is this a cliche to say they can rise up? I shouldn't really say that. We should ban all that crap. But. They still have some excellent players in there, and they have a thumping great big pack, as you say. And as we saw in Scotland, if England can't get the ball they want because their forwards can't dominate, then suddenly they can look average.
Yeah, England win this. I know you should be very careful about predicting, but I'm not on it now, so I can do.
I was just asked to give the opposite reason.
Right.
But
England,
I'm with you.
England get beaten by teams that are incredibly quick and ferocious at the breakdown and put some rhythm and tempo on the game. Right, the sides that England find difficult is when England can't control the tempo. I don't see how this French team are going to play at anything other than a ponderous tempo, and I think it's virtually impossible to beat England playing like that.
Do you think that all they have to do really is try and nail Bastereau before he goes too far?
Look, they've played against him. He's had one game against a pretty ordinary Italian team, and we're talking about him if he's some kind of meteor has come onto the scene. He's been around for a long, long time. He's played against England many, many times. He's no different now. They've never had any real... Well, that's not quite true, but they haven't had many problems with him historically. I just don't see how they're going to get enough quick ball to get him over the game line now.
Owen, your result, winners by a certain number of points.
Well, certainly England to win, and I'll give them just the cushion of one score, so maybe 8 points.
Okay, Mark, you think...
England double figures.
England double figures. I think very, very tight. I'll probably go underneath all those. I think England might just sneak it, but don't quite see where all the England points are going to come from, apart from Owen's
point. What you haven't discussed is how England come back after their Scottish disappointment, and to what extent they're, you know, scalded and the reaction.
There'll be a reaction.
Okay, well, so far we've not said a word about the potential Grand Slam winners. I understand they were available at 11-2 for a Grand Slam before the tournament started with William Hill. So come on, Aaron. they are, in my opinion, they've got a level of power and athleticism in the pack, especially up front, which none of the other teams can match. Owen, should they put Scotland away? And as the Scotland sort of dream revival, is it going to hit the buffers?
I think Ireland will see them out because they're such an efficient team, as you say. Scotland will... the Scotland and the away thing, as we discussed a lot after their defeat of England, is, oh, well, that's all very well. Gregor Townsend said this. Oh, this is all very well, but let's be honest, our away record is shite, and it is. And they've... Excuse me, listeners.
Can we say shite?
But I think Scotland will be empowered by that. The new world under Gregor Townsend, I think there is a feeling that they're on a roll now, so I expect them to come and put a... I think that'll be an absolutely outstanding game, but I just think Ireland's nous and experience at winning these sort of games is so good.
Mark, are two big Irish provinces in the quarterfinals going like a bomb. Ireland also going like a bomb, with players out. Is this some sort of illusion, or are they approaching the real thing?
Ireland, well, they're third in the world, aren't they, in the rankings? And you know, that gives you an indication. They beat the All Blacks last year. They beat England last year. So they've beaten the two sides that are ranked above them. So they're by no means a flash in the pan. And they've got more depth than they used to have. Mm. And this guy who's coming at tight end, whose name has just escaped me.
Porter.
Andrew Porter.
Oh, my word. I mean, goodness me, you thought, oh, there's a man, Furlong, there's a boy they can't afford to lose.
Yeah.
And then this fella comes in, and he looks really very, very good. And you know, Sean O'Brien's not playing, and they've got problems in the centre in terms of availability. It's pretty impressive, and I think Joe Smith's a terrific coach. However, you know, they weren't that good against France. They were very fortunate to win that game, and on such small margins. You know, if France had won that, the whole French conversation could well have been very different. That's the thing about the Six Nations. There aren't that many games. You lose one, it's a crisis. You win one, it's a revival. So I think they're a really good side. I think... we'll talk about Scotland in a minute. I think in Dublin, it's very hard to back the away team, whoever they are. I wouldn't back England there at the moment. I'm not sure I'd back the All Blacks in Dublin at the moment. I think it'd be really close.
Okay.
I wouldn't back anyone against Ireland at the moment in Dublin. And therefore, I think, by definition, I think they'll win on the
So weekend. Sort of 4 stars from Mark, but not 5 stars. Owen... Scotland really are going to have to measure up in a way that's got to exceed even their performance against England, surely.
Yeah, and that's, again, that emotional side. Can they reproduce that? I mean, we've seen so many occasions where England are going for the grandstand or England are going for whatever, and the Celtic teams, they summon up that great performance to stop them, don't they? And we've seen that from Scotland. So looking further down the line, when Ireland come to Twickenham, probably pursuing a Grand Slam, do England have that emotional side in them to summon up that we're going to stop them, whatever we care about, we want to stop that side? I think that would be an interesting case there. But to go back to Scotland, they've summoned that up once, so they have to find a way of doing it again.
Totally agree with you about the mental side of it, because if England, maybe they're going for the championship, but the idea that even though our season's a disaster, we can now stop Ireland winning the Grand Slam. That should be a massive, massive goal. And, you know, that we're a stage ahead of ourselves now, but that should be massive. And that's Ireland-Scotland.
Can I just back about Scotland? Because
look, it's my show. What's going on? I keep on being... Yeah, go on. Know, go on.
Balance. I think that this away thing's overdone. They're a side who are improving, and when you improve, you start by winning your home games. They've beaten Ireland and England, and they came very, very close to beating the All Blacks at Murrayfield. That tells me that this isn't a sort of side that it just occasionally, you know, sort of pulls something off. They beat Australia away in the summer. Everyone talks about their away form. They won away in Australia. It wasn't so long ago. That was a significant achievement. I accept that it's less so given Australia's issues at the moment. I don't think they'll win on the weekend, but I don't think Scotland is a flash in the pan. I think Scotland's year is next year when the fixtures fall. They have to go to Twickenham, but they have Ireland at home. They have Wales at home. I think that's their year. And also, the other thing I think people have not noticing, they've been doing this with a third-choice front row. If you look at the number of players who are back in the Scotland squad this weekend, Alex Dunbar, by a country mile their best 12, is back in the squad. Two of their props are back. Richie Gray's back. People are going on about the injuries to Wales and Ireland and England to a degree, but Scotland have got the smallest player base other than Italy. They're the country that can afford injuries least of all. And I think what they've done is incredibly impressive. And again, I don't buy the whole, it's Townsend. I think Vern Tocotta did a great job. And the continuity between him and Gregor Townsend, who's just added to it, has been terrific.
That's fair enough. The legacy of Cotter. For me, I know that I totally agree with what you say about Scotland, but there's one thing about Ireland. They've only ever won two Grand Slams. The second one, if Gavin Henson had been... When Gavin Henson was running up to take the kick from easily within his range in the last kick of the match, and Stephen Jones, who was knackered, grabbed it, they would only ever have won one Grand Slam. And I tell you what, if they beat Scotland, as we all expect, Ireland next week will be in a ferment. It'll be absolutely hysterical. And that's what England will have to face at Twickenham.
And the Cheltenham Festival as well.
Cheltenham Festival as well. That's right, there's no Banzi for a week, is there? Thank you, guys. That's Ireland, Scotland.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Wales play Italy on the Sunday. Well, not so much a sideshow, but certainly not as significant as the other games, except that should Wales get 5 points, which they should at home, they are still at the top, nominally in contention. Owen, I know you've not been following Wales that much because you're Anglo-centric, is that the word? No, I don't mean that sounds offensive. Because you have to follow England in your job as the leading rugby writer in the world. But Wales, in a way, may think that they've come out of it fairly reasonably so far, considering they've got, is it 7 Lions still to come back?
Lions check. Well, they got bigger back, didn't they? Mm-hmm. They'll get a Faletau back next time. And they've got North back. So, I mean, that's a decent return. Mm. Obviously, there's still a load missing. I think Wales will look back on their defeat in Dublin and just kick themselves because, albeit they had players missing it, etc., they made so many errors, yet they got within a minute of winning the thing. Got within a dicey gamble of a pass in the last play of the game to snatch it. So... Given the way their Six Nations has gone and the injuries, sort of as same Mark said with Scotland, you know, you wonder what can they be like next season, because they've hung in this year and it's been, you know, pretty hopeless battle against misfortune, really.
It is funny because Warren as good, when he goes back, is going to have this amazing record card of up in the sky and down in the toilets because. It's World Cup, they have done very well and been unfortunate. Six Nations, not too bad. Autumn Internationals, they couldn't beat your grandmother.
Nope.
So it is rather bizarre. But let's go. Ireland, fight predictions, Ireland, Scotland.
I think Ireland will do that by about 10. I just think they're good enough to stretch slightly clear.
Yeah, about the same.
Do you? Oh, I thought you might think it was closer. No. I think maybe even more. Wales, Italy, I'll kick off. I think they'll get a bonus point. I think it might take him a fair time. I think they'll score 4 tries and win by 19, 20 points.
Just think the interesting thing about that one is Wales, we discussed, but at what point do the Italian team, the Italian players just start shrugging their shoulders and go, this isn't a lot of fun? You know, I mean... You watch him every year, and Parise just admire so much that he's out there fighting that fight. But God, I mean, how do they keep their spirits up?
Mark, let's ask Mark a structural question then. What happens? They're spending a heck of a lot of time getting anything together. Conor O'Shea, you know very well.
Yeah.
Probably, if he can do it, probably no one can. Are we embarrassed now by them, and are we being pushed towards promotion and relegation?
I think people have to recognise that Italy come off a very, very low playing base, a bit like Scotland. And culturally, rugby's not that important in the big cities. It's only in the small towns like Rovigo and Treviso, who are too small to have a soccer team. And it was stronger in the 80s when it sort of professionalism was in Italy in terms of being paid way before a lot of other countries. And that allowed them to also, what people don't realise, they'd got an awful lot of Argentinian players used to come and play for Italy. And they were therefore much, much stronger. Now they're trying, and I know Connor's trying, his job is much more than just being the national coach. They are trying to build an infrastructure in terms of a base of players, which will take 10 to 20 years. The problem is they should have tried to do that right at the beginning. They deserve their place. You know, they used to beat Wales regularly, Scotland regularly.
France
regularly. And you couldn't argue on the pitch they didn't deserve a shot. It would be madness, in my view, to now pull that away because it takes a generation of very, very high funding, which participating in the Six Nations gives you, to get that critical mass of players. They've actually almost had half their player base, which was the Argentinian half, taken away.
Oh, and Mark's saying that, you know, they've been so slow to get this going, and now it may take 10 or 20 years. Well, blimey, in 10 years' time, Parise's face is going to be like thunder.
He's not the player he was, is he?
No, he's not. But
he'll
I mean,
he'll still be out there captaining him, though.
Oh, he would be, yeah. He'd be almost, well, sorry, he's almost bald now, but 10 years is a long time to wait.
Well, we wait, and as Mark's suggesting, things could have been done differently, but you can't. You know, that's easy to say that with hindsight. So, I agree. If you pull them out, and then what damage are you going to do? They might never come back.
They won't.
But then you get back to what about the other nations who deserve a chance?
Well, hold on a minute. What about the other nations? I don't quite get this. Okay, everyone says Georgia.
Here we go.
Can I just remind the last time Georgia played a Six Nations team in this country? They went, wasn't it?
They went to Scotland,
it was Scotland and then Wales this year, but as a Welsh B team.
Yeah.
They got absolutely thumped.
Now, well, they did pretty well against that Wales B team, didn't they?
They did okay against the Wales B team. Italy, before they got into the Six Nations, were beating Five Nations teams regularly. You could make a case for Romania back in the 80s. I think the case for giving Georgia access to the Six Nations at the expense of another country is nonsense.
I'm sorry, I bought up promotion relegation. I'll leave the studio. I'm off. I'm going. Cheerio. I know I said the wrong word, Owen.
No, it's not that.
I think
Georgia need miles more fixtures. That's a different issue.
Don't you think that being in the Six Nations gives you a huge step towards a critical mass point?
Didn't help with Italy, did it?
No, it didn't.
No, and I don't. And Georgia's only got 3 million people, and it's a bigger sport in Georgia than it is in Italy. But if you're going to do it through promotion relegation, are you seriously saying that when Wales come bottom, like they do occasionally, they're going to be replaced by another country for a year?
Yes,
I think you have to. Well, you can say that, but the other way of looking at it is this is a competition with six nations, and five of them are often competitive. And too many Italian games they're just not a contest. So
that's
you can look at this from so many points of view.
And between 1951 and 1955, Scotland didn't win a game.
Let's just talk about in general before we go. Briefly, do we still love the Six Nations? Because let me explain why. I don't think it's anything like as good as it was, because it's in such a tiny space. The kickoff times are ludicrous. The Friday night and Sunday kickoff times are pathetic. And also, I don't care about the TV. Also, it is reduced totally, dramatically, slashed the number of visiting fans. I could not locate any large numbers of England fans
coming off a long run up on this one, Mark.
In Merrifield. Mark, you at one stage you were Welsh at one stage of your career. And you know what Cardiff was like when the French came.
Yeah.
10,000. Yeah. When Graham Henry was coach of Wales, 40,000 Welshmen went to Scotland. That is all gone. That is all gone. And that is half the colour of it gone.
Yes, but that I don't think is so much to do with the tournament itself, although I think it has a role to play. but it has something to do with a lot of other social changes. And I remember, you know, and we know about when I was a lad and I used to go off to Murrayfield and it was the trip that every Welsh boy wanted to go on and all the rest of it. Those days are gone and they're not coming back. And there's a whole load of reasons for why that's the case. If you start, at the end of the day, if for the Celtic nations and Italy, without that generates such a huge percentage of the revenue that is used to keep the game afloat in those territories, you really can't have it both ways. You can't say, let's go back to Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, everybody travels, and don't. There's no trains out of Cardiff on a Friday night, which I agree, it's ridiculous. But the fact is that the viewing figures are still really high. It gives rugby union a platform that no other tournament gives.
See, Jones,
it.
This is and the problem. You get someone on who knows what he's talking about how finance and administration works.
It gets really dull, doesn't it?
It's more than finance.
Of course,
what do you think of the Evans theory that people don't like going on the lash anymore? I haven't seen any evidence for that. Welsh people don't want to go on the lash and have a
well,
good
French
night.
Rugby players want to go on the lash,
well,
don't they?
Yeah, well,
absolutely. I love it. Scottish rugby fans the morning after like to go on the lash.
Drinking levels amongst the millennials are well down, actually. There we are.
Blimey. My three kids are millennials. I have not noticed.
Outliers.
Thank you very much for listening to us.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.